TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 129, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Tom from Glendale.
And Susie from Sherman Oaks.
And this week, in honor of Carmageddon 2 in LA, everyone is actually in their residence. So excuse any technical popping or whatever from everyone being at home. So let's go on with the news. First up, piece of news I have is that Franklin and Bash was renewed. Major Crimes was renewed. So basically TNT did their whole renewal thing. Tom, you had some renewals?
Yeah, USA renewed Royal Pains, Covert Affairs, and White Collar.
Well, of course, White Collar.
Yeah. Woohoo.
And with some sad news, Michael O'Hare from Babylon 5, he was Commander Sinclair. He passed away yesterday, I want to say. So yep. That was not overly happy news for the B5 fans. So.
No. Poor guy was only 62, which...
Whoa.
Yeah.
So let's move on to talking about the shows. First up, let's talk about Doctor Who, and this was the Year of the Long Invasion.
And it was the first truly great episode of season 6, 7? What season are we on now?
7.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Time flies. Yeah.
Yep.
It was the first pretty good one, because mainly it dealt with a unique situation for the Doctor, where he was domestic for that year. Well, sort of.
For a period of time,
he actually stayed in one location and stayed with the Pawns, which I think he's never, ever done. Except for the one time, a couple of times, like I think the third Doctor, where the TARDIS was actually broken. Has he ever done anything like that?
So. Right. Well, and I think... He stayed with the Pawns this time, but I know in the past, in one of the episodes with James Corbin, he stayed... James Gordon, sorry. He stayed at that house for a little while as a tenant or whatever.
Oh, the Lodger episode. But that was more because he was investigating something.
Exactly. He was there on purpose. But this episode, it's funny because when I think back to it, since it was actually like a week ago, I liked it a lot. Part of the reason was because we all know I have this amazing love for Amy Pond. She didn't annoy me. This is like one of the first episodes where I thought she was actually very normal and down to earth and kind of funny. And it was the Doctor that was starting to annoy me. I think it's because he was just kind of out of his element, you know. But part of it was too. There was so much time stuff happening in this one episode where they were actually in one location for most of it. That I, thinking back on it, I don't actually remember. Did he travel a couple times? Didn't he, or were he was just talking about how much time he was away from them?
He did travel because at first he got very bored very quickly. He was like, he was like, "How can you guys just sit around?" And he was like, "I'll be back." And he left for a while and then came back.
Okay.
The thing with the cube, it had this slow build of dread because you knew something was going to be wrong, but you didn't know what and how it all comes together. And the wormhole in the hospital elevator was kind of cool. When I say it was a fun episode, I mean the episode wasn't light and frilly, but it was kind of one of their suspense slash not quite horror tinged episode, but it was a solid episode, and it didn't feel overly kiddified like a couple of the other episodes this season have.
Overly kiddified. I don't know if that's a verb, but we'll take it.
By kiddified, targeted towards younger viewers.
Yeah, I understood what you meant. Okay. I was just amazed that you had made a new word. That's all.
Yes, for the doctor, that works. Sure. Well, and I like that stuff just kind of kept happening in the episode, even though the doctor was bored. We weren't because everything was fast paced for the most part.
Right.
So it's just a lot of things just kept happening. And, of course, there was the return of UNIT, finally.
And the Lethbridge, his daughter, granddaughter. His granddaughter.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And just the slow reveal of the cubes and the fact that even as things started happening with them, you know, just what we still didn't know what was going to happen and where it was going to go. Was it going to be a big thing, a little thing? And then, of course, it ends up everybody's getting heart attacks, which I thought was kind of an interesting twist.
Well, the only thing that I thought I called foul on is a third of the population has heart attacks. The doctor spends the next, like, couple of hours trying to figure out how to fix it. And then he does this magic hand wand thing. And then everybody has a heart attack. I'm like, okay, even if you could do that, all those people have been dead for hours. They're all brain damaged. So
I'm glad you noticed that too, because I did think that was a bit too on the nose or something.
Too convenient.
Yeah. Well, not just convenient. I feel like that was a cheat. Like
that was the kiddified part.
Yeah, that was like, those one third people are dead. That's just done.
But the thing is, they all just like get up from the sidewalk or wherever they were. Like everyone around them is like, everyone's like having heart attacks, and then they just like get up and walk away. Like, oh well.
And nobody did anything. Right. What'd you say?
It's like the Monty Python sketch. I got better.
All right, so let's wrap up Doctor Who. Overall, I'd say we all thought it was good. It did have a fundamental problem at the end, but we're still going to give it a thumbs up.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to Boardwalk Empire. And this is where I realized that there was a reason why I enjoyed Boardwalk Empire stacked up in a row, because watching them individually, it felt so slow that I was ready to blow my brains out. I was like, I was literally...
I liked the episode. They have a unique style where they really take their time easing into the different plot lines of a season. It's kind of like a roller coaster going uphill. But you could see Bobby Cannavale's character from last week, Rossetti, I think is the character's name, but you could see he was up to no good, and this week he proved it.
Well, I mean, yeah, I knew that he was not a good guy, but I'm just saying, sitting and watching the episode last night, I think partly because I had so much television to watch, which was ridiculous how much I had to watch last night, and I felt like I was being punished by watching Boardwalk Empire because it was so slow. And I had to remind myself, when I was watching and I was enjoying it, it was when I had all the episodes and I could just, I literally watched two seasons really fast and it was great.
So you enjoy it more when you can binge on it.
Yes.
Instead of having a polite meal a week at a time. Yeah.
Well, especially because there's so much other television and I was like, I don't have the patience for this. Like, it's going too slow right now. And maybe next, like, they showed clips for the upcoming weeks, and maybe if it gets to where all that stuff is happening, then I'll be fine. But for right now, I'm like, I don't have time for this. It was not my most enjoyable episode. And plus, there was hardly any Nookie, too. It was like all these other people that they're trying to get us to understand and know, and I hate his brother, and his brother just got out of prison.
With his brother was, I loved how that unfolded. Eli. Just realizing that, you know, being out of commission for a couple of years, and he had this birthday present stashed for his son. It's a model airplane, kind of like a Wright Brothers style airplane, but his son's been the breadwinner while he's been in jail.
Right.
And so he gives it to him, and it's like, you know, I thought it was really interesting to humanize Eli, because he's a douche, but now at least you can feel for him.
Well, I got that. It's like, basically, his son is now a grown man. Like, he missed his son turning from a boy into a man. And giving his son this little airplane dealy is just like, it's like giving a grown-up that. They're like, okay, sure, that's fine, thanks. You know, and I did feel a little bit for him, but of course his solution is now to go and be in a life of crime so you can get arrested again and get sent back to prison. That's brilliant.
It's the family business, man.
I know, but I guess he feels an urgency to show that he can bring in money.
Right.
And I get that, but I'm not sure I care, because I've always hated Eli. Like, Eli is the character that I never understood. Like, even before Nookie killed Jimmy, I always felt he should have killed his brother.
Well, but the thing is, Eli's always had to deal with being in Nookie's shadow.
And that's not my problem.
He makes his power play to get out of it, and he fails miserably. And instead of dying, he's left to wallow in that position, and grovel in Nookie's shadow.
Well, yeah, that was kind of cold, because Nookie was very much like, fine, you're out of prison, I'll make sure you have a job, but he made sure it was at the bottom of the rung job so that he never again starts thinking about taking over for Nookie.
Yep. You know?
And I get it, but and I kind of also get keep your enemies, your friends close and your enemies closer. I kind of get that too, so that if his brother's working for him, he at least can keep an eye on him. I get that as well, but man, his brother literally tried to kill him. So I'm not sure how I'd feel about that. But then again, if Nookie kills his brother, then he has to take care of his brother's like 20 kids. His brother has a ridiculous number of children. But I feel like Nookie would do that because that's his family. So he would totally take care of his brother's kids. But yeah, I hate his brother. There was a lot of his brother in this episode. So anyway, wrapping up.
Shout out to Tim Van Patten, who won the directing drama Emmy for Broken Player last week.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to say thumb sideways because Tom enjoyed it more than I did. So he has a thumb up and I'm like, meh. So,
we counterbalance.
All right. So next up, let's talk about Castle, the season premiere. And this is the episode everyone's been waiting for because it's like...
OMG! Exclamation point! WOW! Exclamation point!
Yeah, they finally got together at the end of last season, and this season you're like, okay, so what's the relationship going to be like? And I liked that they immediately were like, all right, we're totally serious about this relationship, and then immediately they start saying, go in the closet, and they want to hide it. And I'm like, you guys are such a contradiction. But that's kind of their characters, I suppose. But
I think it makes sense, though, because everybody, I mean, Castle's family and Beckett's, you know, police family are all a bunch of nosy busybodies.
That's true. But, I mean, how long, I think they showed in the previews, like, how long do they think they can keep it a secret from a bunch of detectives? Though they've been flirty forever, but now
it would be the thing is it wouldn't be a surprise to any of them. Like he has her hide from his mom and daughter. It's like, oh please, his mom has been like hoping he would get together with her forever, you know, and same with the daughter. So
the daughter doesn't want him together with Beckett.
Well, has she ever said that? I don't remember her ever saying that.
I don't remember her ever saying that.
Okay, no, well, she's been pretty level-headed. She worked with Beckett that one time. She was like the intern in the morgue kind of thing, and she liked her.
Well, I'm not saying she doesn't like Beckett. She does like Beckett. She just doesn't want her dad with Beckett. Or maybe I'm channeling the fact that when I interviewed her, the actress said that.
Yeah, maybe. It might have been the actress.
The actress was very vocal about the fact that she hates the relationship. She's like, I hate it.
Oh, okay.
And everybody on stage was like, everybody on stage was just looking at her like, what's wrong with you? She's like, I hate it. I don't want it. And I think maybe she thinks it's going to take away part of her relationship with her dad. So, I don't know.
Well, maybe, but from what we've seen on screen, it's everybody's been rooting for him, whether or not they know it, you know?
Right.
Well, except for the new female boss, who I can never remember her name.
Who
hates everybody, I know. And I loved in this episode, at one point, she tells Kate at the end, she's like, I respect your loyalty, you know, to what's his name, the old boss. And she's like, I hope someday you'll have that for me. I'm like, well, not if you're going to stay a biatch.
And you should have seen the look on Beckett's face when she said that. She, like, wrinkled her nose.
Yeah, I know. It was pretty funny. I'm like, okay, great. But as far as the episode itself goes and, like, what happened in it, you know, the relationship thing, of course, was the big thing everybody was waiting for. So they hit that one right off the first beat. But I felt bad for Ryan because I know what he was trying to do at the end of, you know, at the end of the season and the whole thing about him supposedly like betraying them by, you know, calling it in. But, you know, he essentially helped save her life. But I like how this one, you know, there's still the conflict between, Ryan and Esposito. Yeah, but I mean, you know, Esposito's just kind of a hard nose and he'll get over it soon enough. But I liked that they kept that going, you know, and that Ryan is still kind of an unknown to them, like, will he or won't we? And they even had that in the episode, you know, like later on he was about to call it in and they're like, don't you dare. So that was good. He kept trying, he was like doing everything he could to try and help them, you know, kind of off the books, which was cool.
But I did like the reveal that now we know who the bad guy is, the guy who killed the mom.
Yes.
And we have that reveal. We have the confession. He totally admitted that he did it.
Yep.
And we can't do anything about it.
Yeah. It's just that she knows that she knows.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I love the way that she totally pimp slaps him upside the head at the end of the episode, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to have some satisfaction because I kept watching the episode and I'm like, hit him.
Yeah, because you know she wasn't going to kill him, obviously.
Right.
But that was kind of funny. And I like the fact that when she did it, it wasn't just like she didn't like knee him or do whatever. It's like she specifically, you know, caught him with the back end of the gun and then basically said, well, that's going to leave a little scar.
That's
every time you
mark.
See it, you're going to remember me. Okay.
Yeah, so because he was like, you're soft, you're not whatever. And she's like, yeah, really? And I was like, oh, that was the wrong thing to say to her. But, yeah, I think that was a good episode. I thought that they actually had a really good premiere. They started off the season in a really good place, so I'm kind of happy. Yay! Yep. Thumbs up, Castle. Hey, we all agreed. That doesn't happen very often. All right.
Stand by.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
As we say that, next up we talk Revolution. And Revolution, first I'm going to talk about the ratings, which I think we all had a discussion about last week. And the ratings for the premiere were really high. They were like 11 point something million. And this week, the ratings were at about 9 million. So they lost, even with the return of all the new shows, the big hits like Hawaii Five-0 and all the other big things it was going up against, and being the second episode, and you're expected to have some deterioration in your ratings between your first and your second episode. So including that deterioration and all the competition, they didn't go down very much. That's actually a pretty respectable decrease in ratings. And NBC actually has their first bona fide hit in forever. I mean, seriously, it's like, when was the last time NBC had a hit? I can't think of one. So, congratulations, NBC. All right, now we'll talk about the episode. Go ahead, Tom, you speak first.
Okay, here's my problem with Revolution. Aside from the flawed premise, which just doesn't fly in the face of real science, when we have the climactic moment of the episode where the niece has to make this big decision if she's going to be able to kill the bad guys and her uncle doesn't think she can, they show a flashback, which we talked about last week, that
yes,
flashbacks are starting to be overused on a lot of these shows. So they show a flashback to when she was a little girl and some guy is about to snatch her. And then her dad picks up a gun and is going to shoot the bad guy, but doesn't have the stones to do it. And the bad guy laughs in his face. Then we cut back to the girl who's getting ready to shoot the bad guys. Then we cut back to a flashback, the same flashback, but we hear a gunshot. And we reveal that her mom, played by Elizabeth Mitchell, is the one who shot the bad guy. Then we come back to present day, and she shoots the bad guys. And that tells me that either the editor or the writers or some combination don't know anything about suspense, because they should have shown the flashback of the mom after she made the decision to kill the bad guys. That's the first problem I have with last week's episode.
Okay.
And the other problem is we've been told for the first 2 hours of the show that her mom, played by Elizabeth Mitchell, is dead. And then at the end of the show, oh my gosh, Elizabeth Mitchell was alive.
Well, if you recall, if you recall last week or even whatever week we talked about the first episode of Revolution, I specifically said Elizabeth Mitchell isn't dead because all they said was she went out on the road, she never came back, and they all assumed she was dead. I was like, oh, she's totally not dead.
But considering that, you know, the characters are presuming as if she were dead, you'd think there would be a little bit more build-up than have her just casually stroll into the office and talk to scrawny Australian actor trying to fake an American accent and an awful choice for the big bad. It was just so matter of fact. It was like, seriously? This should be kind of a big deal that she's not dead.
I think it'll be a big deal when her family finds out that she's not dead. But I did think what I want to find out is, like, Monroe tells her, oh, your husband's dead and we have your son, so now you have to give us this information. And I would, if I was her, I'd be like, show me my son. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't believe him because as far as we can tell, he's kept her captive all this time. And I get the impression he's been lying to her a lot, so I know right now she's kind of freaked out because she doesn't know what to believe. But I think she's smart, and I think she'll ask to see her son first. So I'm interested in that. I'm interested in where that's going. I thought that I agree that some of the whole proving that what's her name, Charlie, can really kill someone.
Charlie.
Yeah, I think they put a little bit too much emphasis on that, except that I actually wanted to smack her because she was the reason that her uncle almost gets killed in this episode. She's like, oh, don't kill the bad guy. You know, she's like, please. And then he listened to her and almost ends up killed 5 minutes later. I was like, in a world like that, you never leave your enemies behind. And she's lived in this weird, bizarre shelter. But I'm glad that she actually saw the consequences of her sparing someone's life. You know, she convinced her uncle to spare somebody's life, and then her uncle and all of them almost ended up dead because of what she did. And so she has learned from that, that's not the way you do it in the real world. It might have worked in her little closed-off community, but it doesn't work now. And I do like that they're growing the character, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with them taking the character from one spot, and we're going to move her somewhere else, and her uncle is kind of guiding her, but she's also guiding him because he's become so jaded he doesn't see anything else. So that's, I think that's interesting. I like their relationship. So I like the show a lot.
Yeah, I can't. I'm sorry. They're not giving the good actors, the older actors, enough interesting stuff to do.
I think they're giving the uncle a lot to do. The uncle has more to do than anybody else.
But he's only one out of an ensemble cast. They're focusing way too much on the younger actors who are very pretty with amazing hair, considering the apocalypse.
Well, Charlie is a young actress, and she's not anywhere near as good as anybody else. But this time, I did like Giancarlo Esposito's interaction
he's
with the.
He's always good.
I know, but I'm saying in this episode, he has this great moment with the kid where he's like, "Okay, be honest with me. Give your opinion. Be real." And the kid actually does tell him what he thinks, which was an awesome observation. And then, of course, Giancarlo gets really upset and like almost strangles the kid out. So I thought that was fantastic. All that stuff
was
really good.
I was kind of hoping he was going to strangle the kid.
Well, you know he couldn't, because then he couldn't show up to Monroe. It's like, I killed the dad, and oops, the kid made me angry and I strangled him. Yeah. That's the kid is the only hope that he has of not being killed. Because he killed the father. So there's no way he's killing that kid. But yeah, I think that the strong actors, because Elizabeth, every weak actor is at least in a scene with a strong actor. They haven't put the weak actors together in a scene and have, you know. But I'm fine with that.
Then the world really would explode.
All right, so let's move on. Next up, let's talk about Warehouse 13. Mm-hmm. What did you think, Susie?
I liked it overall. I would give it a 75% out of 100. No, it's like, you know, because it's like the 50% is usually, I'm never sure if it's going to be good or bad. I have to say one of the main things that come to mind that I didn't like about the episode is shirtless Pete.
Oh, good Lord, man. Put your shirt on.
I know.
Seriously.
Either put your
shirt on or get to the gym more often.
Seriously. Isn't that sad that that's the first thing that like comes to mind, literally, like my mind's eye when I remember the episode? Him shirtless glowing. Okay. But I liked that particular. I liked the framing of the episode. Like, they had all three of them going out specifically to find artifacts that they had no idea what they were going to find.
And to help I did like that they were going to help their family. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that it was just like, you know, okay, this is interesting. Instead of just the teams out doing their thing, they're really, each one is on their own trying to figure out what it is that's, you know, affecting their family or loved one. And then, of course, shout out to Amy Acker for being in two shows that were awesome this week. Well, one more awesome than the other. But she was good at being kind of bad in this one, you know, because of she was being under the influence. So that was kind of cool. So I love seeing her in anything anyway. Of course, Jerry Ryan being in it as well. So they had great supporting cast. So I liked the fact that they did that. So that was a good element of it. Then we had Artie at the warehouse where, of course, we were assuming, you know, and still playing along with what they had been giving us up to now, where he's sitting there fighting with brother Adrian. And then there's the element of Jinx and Mrs. Fredericks heading off to actually find out what's going on with the Brotherhood, and that really kind of fun reveal about, oh, the brothers were actually in that secret room, but they were captured in the frame and the painting, so that was kind of neat. But then So I liked that, the part where they each had their individual tasks to complete. Did not like the shirtless Pete, but I liked the idea that he had this, you know, this moving tattoo that was basically going to go nuclear. So I thought that was kind of neat. What I didn't like is the same thing that, so those are all the things I liked about it. The thing I didn't like is what you were mentioning a bit earlier about how it's like, what the hell is going on with Artie? Where did that go? What happened with that? So that's where I kind of went, yeah, I don't think so. And his breakdown was so like almost immediate that I just kind of sat there and went, what the F? You know, you've got to be kidding me. You know, it just, all it took was Lena to come in to basically say, oh, stop, Artie, stop, you know, for everything to suddenly coalesce. And we find all these flashbacks to all these times and places where it was just him. So are we supposed to believe in the episode a couple weeks ago where Claudia and Jinx were trying to help Artie? They were like in that old house or something.
Right.
He was upstairs and running around. And
well,
yeah,
he was playing both people. He was turning himself into Brother Adrian with the thimble. And
apparently.
Then, yeah. So, but.
Because he set the trap to kill them, apparently, then.
Right.
Okay.
Now, my problem with this episode, because they are wide and varied, but I will say that I was enjoying it probably for the first little bit when everybody went on their own separate missions. And I was like, whatever's going on in the warehouse was actually boring because I've gotten to the point where I don't care what Artie is doing because I hate that storyline.
Yep.
And then when they do the big reveal of, hey, it's Fight Club, I was like, you have got to be kidding me, mainly because they didn't earn that. They did not earn that reveal. They did not earn that kind of psychosis or doing the flashback revealing him talking to himself in restaurants.
Yeah.
One, because when you do stuff like that, you have other people reacting to him talk. They should have had other people reacting to him talking to himself.
Yeah, it's like the Sixth Sense thing. Yeah, it's like you have to prove that there was nobody to see or to see
exactly.
It, you know?
And
yes.
They had none of that in
yep.
the entire series that they had to build up to this. There were no clues, no indications, no nothing. And it was false. It was a very false. You talk about writing, Tom. This was awful writing. So
I think the reveal was not handled well. I thought the shock of killing Lena was interesting, considering they never use her anyway.
Now,
so well,
I mean, like,
well
but, that, but that's what I say. Who cares? They kill Lena, and I don't care.
Well, I care just because they did something, and it was like, oh, that was edgy for them to kill this character that was supposedly one of the, you know, sort of main-ish characters.
Character that I don't even know her name. She's been on the show since season one, and I don't know who she is. I don't know
She's
any...
the black chick. Come on. She's the young black chick. So.
There you go.
I've got no information on her. I know nothing about her family. I know nothing about her at all. I do not care that they killed her, so it was cheap. I was like, oh, they're going to kill her? All right, whatever. So there was nothing to that episode. That's my feeling of it. So, boo, Warehouse 13. I am very disappointed in this season.
I'm with Susie for this episode, but I'm with Libby about the season overall.
Yeah.
It's a disappointing season.
Yep.
All right, so let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk about the premiere of NCIS, mainly because at the end of last season, they blew up the entire building and they were like, oh, who's going to survive? And I was like, oh, ooh, it depends on who signs their contract for next season.
For season
10. So once I heard that all the actors signed their contract over the summer, I was like, oh, and everyone's going to survive. That's pretty much what happened. So I wasn't surprised by that. But what I love about the show is when Gibbs is angry. Anytime anyone messes with his family and he gets really angry, I get really happy. So those two things are directly linked. And this week's episode, he was very angry. And I was like, yay!
Yeah. Well, they didn't just mess with his people. They messed with his house. Literally.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Like this was his office. Those were, you know, other employees, the whole thing, you know.
Yeah, they came into his house and blew stuff up. He was not happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so
that's bad.
It was it was very bad. But I think what's interesting about it is, like I said, I didn't actually even watch last season. But I knew, you know, I'd heard about, you know, the explosion and the whole thing, and, you know, oh, who's hit or miss on this one. So of course, it was just kind of interesting to see the literal fallout of the whole thing. And who was okay, who wasn't. Of course, Abby being her, you know, hard on her sleeve emotional type, you know, her big thing is just like, you know, I'm afraid, and, you know, what do I do now? You know, this guy's still out there. You know, there's no silver lining to this one at all. I can't be, you know, I can't be peppy and, you know, and find anything behind it. And, you know, and Ziva's great. And she's just like, but you're Abby, you know, it's like, you will, if anyone can, you will. And then, you know, it was just really nice that Abby gave her a hug and she was basically like, you know, find this guy and kick his ass, you know? So that was really pretty much the only time she was in the episode, which is a kind of a shame, but it was like, okay, that was worth it. That was her input to it. You know, that's her stand.
What I thought was interesting mm-hmm. was Gibbs' decision. Like, when he goes to the house, he's like, oh, I'm going to meet this guy, and I'm going to meet him at his house, and whatever. He chooses, very specifically, mm-hmm. to bring his knife out, which is a close-up and personal way to kill someone. So, mm-hmm. he went to that house deciding he was going to kill this guy.
Yep.
Also deciding, I'm not going to shoot him, I'm going to use my knife. And the look on his face during that whole conversation, because the guy's like trying to be, he's like, oh, would you like some coffee? He's being like super, super polite. And he's like, oh, no, I'm fine. Like, just that whole conversation was really weird, because you look on Gibbs' face and you realize he's thinking.
It's a done deal.
It's a done deal. He's thinking about, I'm going to kill this man in about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So all of that was pretty cool. And then I was like, but then the look on Gibbs' face after he like guts this dude is like, I was like, I normally feel this way when I'm watching Dexter, so it was kind of bizarre. I'm not used to thinking about Gibbs deliberately premeditated. He didn't try to arrest the man. He didn't try to take him into cut. He didn't try any of that. He came there like, I am going to kill him in about 5 seconds.
Well, but I think that's, but in a way that was, because it was, I noticed that too, and it was kind of interesting as I was watching it, because I've seen in the past, you know, in previous, you know, series seasons and stuff, that exactly like you said at the top, you know, it's like it Gibbs, if you, you know, he gets annoyed all the time over people and events, but, you know, if you push him a little too far and he gets pissed, it's like, okay, give him a clear line of sight because you don't want to be in the way. But in this episode, what I thought was really interesting is because he'd been pushed so far, and that whole idea of like that, and of course, who believed halfway through the episode that the guy died in the car? I mean, come on, we knew that wasn't him. Everyone knew it wasn't him. So it was just kind of like, okay, so get to the point where you realize he's still alive. Okay, now they can find out where he really is, you know, track him down, the whole thing. So when they did that, and like you said, when the chief or whatever you want to call him comes over to the house, and, you know, and Gibbs is like, here's my plan. I'm going to go at him and I'm going to do it alone. And it was like, there was something about his demeanor that was like, it was funny. It was like he'd gone so beyond being pissed at this point that he was almost calm. Like it was, very, it was almost like it was very casual. You know, there really wasn't, he was just like, gotta do it. You know, he was so committed to it that it was like, no matter the outcome, he already knew that that's what he was going to do and no one was going to talk him out of it. And it was like he thought so many steps ahead. And I think at that point he was like, he's not coming out of this until either, you know, Mr. you know, terrorist or them both are dead.
Right.
You know, so you're right. At the end, after he finally got him with the knife, I think it was just this kind of like, okay, I did that with not both of us having to die. You know. So it was but just, I liked that. Yeah, that he didn't just rail and just rage. It was like he'd gotten so far beyond that he just actually calmed down.
It was just, I don't know, I'm not used to seeing that look in Gibbs' eyes. That was a little creepy. All right, so, but it was a good episode, so thumbs up all the way. All right. Yeah. Next up, we're going to talk about the series premiere of Vegas.
I really liked this show, and it was one of the ones I was most anticipating because of, created by the writer of Casino and Goodfellas, Nicholas Pileggi, but just a lot of star power. Dennis Quaid, Michael Chiklis, Carrie-Anne Moss, who looks great since considering how many years it's been since The Matrix, and also Jason O'Mara, who didn't skip a beat going from Terranova to this.
Yeah, I'm not sure I believe he's Dennis Quaid's brother, but he's playing the little brother all right. I like him as being the sidekick. I think he has enough talent to be Dennis Quaid's sidekick versus leading a show. How about that?
I think he could lead a show if it's the right show. He just hasn't found that show yet.
Yeah, maybe. But I think that this will definitely give him, just working with these actors will definitely give him some help in that regard. But yeah, I thought it was, of all the pilots that I've seen, it's probably one of the most solid. Like, it very much, I think Last Resort is probably my favorite new pilot, but this one was definitely very solid. Like, I thought it was every, they hit all the marks, you know, right on. So, only thing is, they did do a little bit of cheesiness with showing how tough Dennis Quaid is by having him beat up a bunch of bikers. Like, that feels a little action movie cheesy, but the rest of it I thought was fine. I liked how, one of the best conversations actually was the mayor was talking to his assistant guy. I don't know, the guy was a district attorney. So the mayor was talking to the district attorney, and district attorney was all like, oh, I could be the sheriff, give me the job versus some rancher. And then he describes...
He tells him what happened during the war.
Yeah.
That was a good monologue.
Yeah, that was great at the end. And he was like, show me a guy who can do better. I'll hire him. And he goes, but that's definitely not you. And I was like, whoa. That was a really good moment. And Chiklis and...
Quaid.
Quaid in there having scenes together... You know, that's really good. Like, you really feel like both of those guys are not to be messed with. You know?
So. I love the way that they seem to be constructing this where Chiklis is obviously the bad guy, but he's the smart guy. So he can make sure that his fingerprints are not on anything that Quaid can prove.
Yeah. He's definitely... Chiklis is definitely the smarter criminal, but that was kind of the point. That's why they brought Chiklis in, because the guy who was running it before wasn't the brightest star in the sky and didn't know how to turn a casino into a profitable organization, and they had a rat, and they had all these other things going on. So, yeah, that's why they sent him. He's the brain trust. So, yeah, good move. I think that this is... If you guys are thinking about... Hey, should I watch Vegas or not? I'm going to say yes, you should. So, thumbs up.
And the ratings were good, too.
Yes. Next up, we're going to talk about Go On. Go On, Tom.
This was my first time watching the show, and I loved it. I think.
Wasn't it? Did you laugh out loud?
I laughed out loud. Oh, my, Rachel Maddow jokes. And also the Lady Bunch joke.
Oh, yes.
That was
That's
so...
what we're saying. This show is really funny, because I was watching it in the hotel room, and I actually, like, laughed out loud a couple times. And it's like, there are very few comedies out there that make me actually laugh out loud. I'll enjoy them, but I won't actually laugh. And this one, I'm like, da-da-da-da-da, you know, like, guffaw.
Well, what's great about it is I didn't get what was happening with the Rachel Maddow joke until he actually tells you, do you think I'm Rachel Maddow? Like, and as soon as he says it, I went, oh, my God. That was pretty good. But this was... I think what's great about this show is it feels like every episode has been getting better and better. Like, they've been improving each week.
Well, they have, what I like about it, too, is, of course, with just the premise itself and the fact that he's got his work life. You know, he's back at the radio program, so he's got his best friend and his assistant, you know, so there's always going to be the dynamic with that group, and things could happen. But then you've got his support group, you know, so he's got, like, these, 9-10 people, you know, that are each one of them they've set up as being very strange and unique, and so you have at least... you know, 12 episodes right there where they could focus on each of those people and his interactions with them and get something from it. So I like the fact that, you know, there's going to constantly be maybe interplay between them and focuses. So this one was the focus on the, you know, of course, the lesbian who lost her lover and, you know, this whole thing and her getting out there and dating again. So I like that. So it's like next week it could be, you know, the next one in the group or whatever.
I like the kiss, by the way. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Because she's like, are you thinking what I'm thinking? And then she kisses him. He goes, no, we were not thinking the same thing.
and then of course, with the, I forget her name, the one who's leading the workshop who used to work with Weight Watchers. I like the fact that everyone's like, oh, she's going in for the cry when she puts her hand on the heart. Right with him. And of course, at the end, you know, they get the cry. So I'm like, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
I love the running gag of the aww.
He's like, this is where you're supposed to say it, people. Aww. So yeah, just and so it's still I'm still pleased that they're still really just kind of moving along with it and pumping along, and it's so refreshing to have a show that again just hits a beat and moves. It doesn't linger on stuff, it just like here's the joke and goes. And that's I think what keeps it really kind of invigorating to watch.
I agree. I think thumbs up. I really like this show.
Mm-hmm. Right. I wish they would move Parks and Rec after this show instead of burying it on Thursday with the other underperforming comedies.
Ah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Modern Family. And I... What?
The best joke in the whole thing. I want a kid named Larry.
And they're like, who do we know? Yeah, he's like, who do we know named Larry? And they're like, that's so strange.
They're like, we don't know. They don't even know where that came from.
But what was great was the whole animal, stuffed animal thing. You would think that that would not be funny. But for some reason, the animal joke, like, it seems like so simple that it wouldn't be funny. But I literally was laughing so hard with the animals on top of the roof of the car. Like, it had gone, the show.
That was such, it was such perfect. A cheap joke, but it was really funny.
It was because they set it up perfectly. Because you already saw them do it earlier where he's, like, entertaining her with the moving of the car, the, like, stopping, breaking. So that when you see him in the background, you're like, what the hell? Oh, you see them inside the car and you're like, you know what he's doing. But then you get the bigger picture with, of course, the visual joke with the animals on the roof. And it was like, oh, they played it so well.
I literally, the show was over. We were in the commercials. I was still laughing. Like, I was just like, holy crap, I cannot believe they did that. And I actually was surprised where they actually gave Jay a really good moment, a really genuine moment. Yes. Like, I was so sure he was going to be a jerk about the baby. Yep. Yep. And his reaction to the baby was not what I thought, and it was pretty awesome.
It was pretty moving,
it was perfect.
It was.
I was like, I'm about to cry.
Me too. I was like, that was exactly what we wanted, and they knew it. Damn it.
I love that they revealed that Luke is a little evil genius.
He's like, I like to do that sometimes. I'd like to drop a grenade and leap, run out of the room. Nice.
The only thing I didn't find funny at all was Dylan and his repeated attempts to try and
That fell flat.
They did it one time, and then they kept doing it. I'm like, no, it's not funny anymore. No. Don't worry. It's like, just go.
Yeah, it's not working. And please move out of the house. Yes,
exactly.
I agree.
Yeah. But otherwise, it was overall very, it was amusing. Yes.
Yes, I really liked this episode. So that was a really good, especially right after they won like a million Emmys.
Yeah, true.
So
true.
I was like, all right, you guys have all those Emmys. Prove it to me. Bring it. And they brought it.
It was a solid opening.
Yeah. They brought it.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Big Bang.
Okay, I just gotta ask. Let me just put this out there. Mm-hmm. What are they doing with Raj and the guy who owns the comic book shop, Stuart?
I have been saying for the last 2 years that Raj is gay.
I think we all kind of assuming that.
Yeah.
But...
And he just doesn't realize it. And somebody's, Peter was telling me, he was like, I don't think he's gay. I was like, dude, he dressed up as Lieutenant Uhura.
Yeah,
I was like, no, straight guys don't really do that. I'm not. And then it was like, in the way the conversation ended, I was like, did they just have a date? Like,
yeah, basically. Well, the best part is, yeah, like the final last, you know, the last laugh, if you will, was Stuart, you know, start to close things up and say like, I could do worse. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, then. So I'm not sure what they're doing with that either. But it is kind of funny because if you think about it, you know, the whole point of that particular, you know, of everybody on the ground, so to speak, on Earth, you know, there was the whole thing about Raj basically being a third wheel, you know, in either of these two relationships. And so then having it kind of move into that as the final act, it's like, well, that is kind of funny because it kind of gets him his own, quote, relationship.
Well, yeah, he does need his own relationship. I agree.
He needs at least a friend like that, I guess. So I thought that was pretty funny.
I have to say Sheldon and Amy Farrah Fowler, their relationship I really like. And then what was great when she's like, I'm leaving if you don't say anything meaningful. And he starts speaking, and when he's giving that speech, he's like, I was like, I've heard this before. I knew it, but I couldn't figure out why I knew it. I was like, I've heard that before. Where have I heard that?
Yep.
So that was pretty good that I was like, thank you. And then they tell you where. I was like, oh, thanks.
Well, because you know it would never in a million bazillion years be Sheldon actually saying something himself. Of course not. Oh, and anyone who was fooled by that, stop watching the show. You don't know who Sheldon really is. So, yeah, you know, so that was very clever as well. And I liked, too, the fact that for a minute there when Raj was with – Penny and
Leonard,
you know, and he's sitting there and he's like, you know, you guys, you know, you're great together. You know, you should tell each other you love each other. And then it's like Penny's like, she never told him, you know, that she loves him. And he's like, tell him you love him right now. You know, I was like, that's kind of cool. He's really making something happen here. And the next thing you know, they kick him out of the room. I'm like, oh, poor Raj. I thought he was getting somewhere.
And I like that he was like, I really thought that would work. And I was like, yeah, you know so what? I really did too. And that also makes me really dislike Penny and Leonard as a couple, because I always feel like Leonard's super needy, but then if you break it down to, he's gotten to the point where he's proposed to her and she's never even said I love you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I did think that was weird.
Well, I'm just like, you know what? You guys are at not the same places. You just need to kind of let this go. So that's my opinion, but go ahead.
I kind of think that the Penny Leonard thing is the one that they really do not want to resolve until the series ends.
It kind of feels that way, yeah.
But I don't care about them. That's my
problem.
That's like, I don't care about them anymore. That's the problem with it. That if you have a relationship that goes on forever and ever and ever, it goes back and forth, it gets to the point where people just don't care. And I'm at that point for them. I don't care about their relationship. I actually want them to break up.
I have three words for you. Ross and Rachel. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I didn't watch that relationship either, so that doesn't help.
And then we didn't talk about Wallowitz up on the supposedly.
Oh,
what was the point of that? You know,
just to be annoying. I didn't. I mean, none of that matters until he gets home. Like once he gets home, then it's going to become interesting. Where it is now, it's not interesting.
But that whole thing about playing, you know, his wife against his mom, and the whole—it's like really, really, you know, please, we've been through this a million times with him, and obviously we're going to keep doing it. So whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, he gets away with it.
Yeah, well, we'll see how long, but yeah, that to me, that was the weakest part of it, was that whole thing with him in space and those two.
I agree. All right, but on the positives, it was a good episode, except for that. All right.
Yeah.
Next up, we're going to talk about the show we've all been waiting for, which is Person of Interest.
Bravo! Yay! Wow. We don't even need to review it. We're like, that's it. It's done. Great. Do we have time to list off what was so freaking amazing about it?
I just know that I screamed at the end when I realized that it wasn't going to be resolved. I was like, what?
Well, I'm glad. I really hate when they end with a really big cliffhanger and it gets resolved in the first 5 minutes of the second episode of the season premiere. Yes.
I agree. And I do believe that it warrants more time. But what tripped me out was this show has never had a two-parter. So I was completely unprepared for a two-parter, basically.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it's more than two. I'm hoping it's at least three.
Well, I mean,
they're just heading to Texas.
I know. I was like, why are we going to Texas? And so,
yeah.
So I was like, ooh, Carter and Reese on a road trip. Fantastic.
I know. It's great. And that's like at the end of the episode. So we got like everything from before.
Well, first of all, they have a dog named Bear. Yay!
Yes. It was so cute. I was actually even amused in the scene when they're in the car and the dog's between them and he's just sitting there panting and just being all happy and panting in the car. I'm like, I love this dog. I should love you. Like, he's perfect for Reese. I love it.
I was smiling through the whole thing, whole time they got the dog. And the only thing that I thought was strange is because I've seen the whole trained dogs that work with the military, but I usually see them the Israelis have. Those dogs. So I thought he was going to say the dog speaks Israeli. And he was like, no, the dog speaks. I was like, Dutch? I've never actually heard that before.
That's what made it so cool.
Yeah. And he's like, I bet you none of you speak Dutch. And I was like, that's probably a good gamble.
And then, of course, were you surprised that he did? No, not at all.
Well, at least enough to give the dog commands.
Absolutely.
But actually, I give points to the dog actor or whoever handled the dog because remember when the dog is barking, he was like, the dog barking is a sign of anxiety. And they show back the dog and he's shaking. So the dog is actually just, like, shaking really nervously. And I was like, how did you manage to get the dog to do that?
Yeah, it was
fantastic.
A great dog. Really,
anyway,
really
yes,
well
I'm
done.
Really crossing my fingers hoping they keep the dog.
They do a while. Yes, they do for a while. At least I've read that. So even if we go back to, like, the opening of the episode, the whole idea of Finch training the machine was just mind-blowing. It was so amazing. The whole thing with the gambling and my favorite, even before the gambling, was just him – like testing it out and walking through the streets of New York and basically saying, can you see me now? You know, hide and seek. Can you see me now? Can you recognize me now? And when he was in the cafe and he's standing there and he's like, can you see me now? And he gets the vibration that says, yes, I do. And he's like, yeah, right. Okay, how many fingers am I holding up? And it vibrates three times. And he's like looking around and there are no cameras in the shop. And then he notices that there's someone who has a camera on his computer. And for me, that just, my brain lit up and I went, oh my God, that's perfect. Because one of the questions I've had about the show for the entire first season was, you see all of the on-screen images because the graphics guys on this show are amazing with the editing. And you're always, always, always seeing these images of people and following them on the street and in other locations and in hallways and, you know, and at service elevators. And I'm just like, how does it get connected to everything like that and get it? And I was like, that's perfect because that shows me, even in its learning phases, he planned it that way. And that's, you know, that's what it that's part of its build of its brain. So that answered one of those questions for him. Like now, whenever I see the machine, seeing people everywhere that it can possibly see them, I get it. And that was just amazing. And so then the whole thing with the machine protecting him and trying to keep him from getting hit by the drunk in the car, you know, and just the and so he then becomes, you know, he's daddy, he's admin, which, you know, is machine speak for daddy. And he has to go back and tell the machine, you know, you can't just protect me. I built you to protect everyone. And so that's amazing because that also answered the question from before where he was kind of telling Reese in the past that if anything happened to him, it's, you know, there had to be a contingency plan. There had to be a plan B. And that was explained in this because he tells the machine, you know, you can't help me, you know, help everyone else, but you can't help me. So that's why Reese didn't get the information when he first asked the machine, where's Harold? No, he got the next number. You know, it's like that was the amazing thing. You know, so the continuity for something that was that embedded in the show, I think was amazing because they could have started the premiere with something almost more superficial, if you will. You know, where's Finch? Let's find him. But the fact that they addressed both of those things, at least for me, was really kind of amazing because they weren't questions that needed to be answered right now. But I just said, wow, you know what? You guys absolutely, the writers, the producers, they know what they're doing with this show 100%. And it was amazing. All so, right, and the only other thing I have to say, because I know you guys have to have your is that one of the things that I thought was so cool, and someone had, I had noticed somebody else had commented on it in some reviews I was reading, but the fact that Reese, you know, being this guy who's obviously partnered with Finch and owes him a huge debt, this man who has maybe not pride, but a very, you know, he's got integrity and he has a very sense of himself and who he is. He is not embarrassed or ashamed in the least to stand on a street corner, whether it's crowded in the middle of the day or empty at night, staring at a camera and negotiating with it.
And yelling with it.
I mean, it's like the fact that he knows that that's the way to do it. And he's, you know, doesn't matter that everybody else might think he's crazy. He's okay. That's the only way he can do it. And that's where he does it. I just thought that was really cool, like this kind of added bonus.
Yeah, I just love that moment where the guy, he's yelling at the camera, and the guy's like, what are you doing? He's like, negotiating.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Tom, speak.
Yeah. I thought the coolest thing about the whole episode is we've been saying for quite a while that the machine is a character, but we are finding out that it really is pretty much sentient.
Yes.
Which is pretty creepy.
But that's cool. Also awesome. I was going to say, that's pretty awesome.
It's creepy, cool, and awesome all at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I look forward to seeing the ramifications of our new knowledge of how this show works.
Well, also, you also have Root, who is been very creepy with her captive, holding Harold captive. Like, her whole behavior with him is really strange. Like, she's not behaving like someone who's captured somebody. She's being very civil, but in a really specific sort of way. She's very much like, I'm not holding you against your will, but, you know, if you try to run, I'm going to kill everybody else. You know, so she's like, I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to kill you, but I will kill this other guy over here, you know. So the way she's holding him captive is very interesting. And apparently she's not... I don't know if she completely understands how the machine works, because it doesn't appear that she's trying to avoid cameras at all. Like, so, like, I'm not sure what she's doing. But then I think at the end, the reveal of her plan was that she wants to set the machine free. And I'm like, what does that mean?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so but that's great. I mean, because I don't know what that means. So that's bringing together, like, all these images, all these things, all these mysteries, and I'm totally in. Like,
well, and speaking of mystery too, the other part that I'm just like scratching my head going, this is going to build into this season, obviously, and who, you know, she's a baddie, but she might be kind of a temporary baddie just because she's taken the protagonist away at this point. But what I want to know is, Who's this Denton and, you know, Weeks? You know, who are these guys? You know,
they're the guys who actually know where the machine is. Because remember, Nathan was like, there are 7 people who know about the machine. And these guys are the ones that make sure that that number is low. And that, because the woman,
she was
one of the people. And then her showing up dead worried them to the point where they basically erased her from existence. Yeah, so they're obviously the other people that know about the machine, but then Root obviously knows about them.
Exactly.
So that's really kind of interesting. And what was great, though, there was this line where their hitman guy is like, oh, I'll go find him and take care of him. And I just started laughing. I was like,
oh, speaking of great lines, I noted because it made me laugh. Of course, it's a Reese line. I think it was when he first comes into Carter's place, because obviously he did twice. So the first time he shows up in her place, And you know, he's like, you know, Finch is taken, you know, and this whole thing, you know, I need you to do this for me, Carter. And she's like, okay. And she's like, well, what are you going to be doing today? And he's like, I'm not sure. Math, I think. And then the next thing you know, he's in the library. He's like writing all the information on the wall. And I'm like, that's awesome. Math, I think.
That was a pretty good line, because he obviously had no idea where this was going.
No. And the other thing, too, I wanted to comment that came out in this episode for me, which you see in all the other episodes, too, obviously, but it was really more pronounced in this one, I think. It's taken to another level, is even though they both, well, in this case, it's only Reese who's doing any of the work with the detectives, even though he relies on Finch and, you know, has him do stuff, and in the past he's shown that, you know, Finch will, you know, it will, you know, stand up and do what he needs to do, it's really clear in this episode that Reese has a lot of respect for Carter, you know, and it's almost like they're almost equals. And you really feel it in this episode, you know, the way that, you know, he discusses it with her. And I know, you know, even, you know, Lionel even makes the comment, oh, you're John, you're like on first name basis, you know, it's like, but I think it's even more than that. It's, you know, the fact that they can talk eye to eye, so to speak. And, you know, she comes and saves him in the end, literally, you know, and she just kind of casually walks over and she's like, I've been meaning to return this. And, you know, he kind of, as he grabs the bag, he kind of pauses for a moment, you know, it's not like their hands are touching or anything, but he kind of pauses and he just kind of, he's like, thanks, you know, and you could see that there's this definite respect that he has for her that he obviously doesn't have for Lionel at this point. But I just kind of like that, like the fact that her character, they went from using her in the beginning of the series because she was just a good cop and they know that they could, you know, that she was reliable, but she's really, by working with them as much as she had and putting as much on the line, you know, it's like she's really one of the team, even though Lionel is as well, but she's more on their level, if you will. So I thought that was really cool, though.
Yeah, I would agree.
Lionel's just doing it to save his hide.
Not anymore. Yeah. I disagree.
No, that was the joke about the friends, you know? He's like, Reese is like, I only have one friend. And then, you know, Lionel's like, he's gagged and he's kind of grunting. And then Reese admits, he's like, well, okay, maybe two.
That was pretty good. All right, we've way passed our timer on this show, so we need to move on.
But it's worth it.
Yes, thumbs up. Love Person of Interest. All right. Next up, let's talk about the premiere of Elementary. And this was I think what's weird about this show, because somebody actually just at work asked me what I thought of Elementary, and I was like, well, if you've seen the British Sherlock, you're probably going to think it's okay. If you've never seen the British Sherlock, you're going to think it's awesome. Yeah. So it really depends on what your experience is. And since I have seen the British Sherlock, I think it's okay.
Same here.
I agree.
That's all we have to say about the episode.
Yep.
the funny thing about Elementary, it really plays like The Mentalist with somebody else playing the, you know, with a different set of characters.
Thank you. With a British accent, you know, so he's like the house meets the mentalist and we're going to call him Sherlock Holmes. But, you know, I saw it at Comic-Con, you know, the pilot. And so now that you guys have a chance to see it. This is what happened to me when I saw it. I was watching the, you know, the pilot. I'm like, okay, this is good. This is interesting. Okay, she's Watson, you know, again, being, ooh, she's a she. But honestly, watching it, getting involved in it, I guess it's like halfway through or a little more than halfway through, he gets the phone call. And I forget who it was from, actually. Was it his dad or somebody on behalf of his dad or something? I forget. But anyway, he answers the phone And he's like, you know, he answers like, you know, Sherlock Holmes or something. And it just kind of was jarring to me because I had forgotten that he was Sherlock Holmes. Like, he was just like a very clever, yeah, I mean, he was like a clever British mentalist slash house.
Well, the thing that's weird about it is the whole safe room thing and the marble, like, the mentalist literally did that in another episode. So that for me was strange because I was like, I've seen the mentalist do this exact thing.
Yeah.
But I think that over time, as I get to learn the characters, I probably will eventually like them.
I'm hoping.
Yeah. And I like Aiden as the police chief. He's a good actor. And yeah, I'm going to watch it. Like, it's not bad. It's not great. It's okay. That's all I got to say about it. I literally have nothing else to say about it.
I agree with your assessment, but I won't be watching. It's just my dance card's pretty much full. And it didn't sustain my interest enough. I mean, and I like the actors. Mm-hmm. I like the cast. I just thought they didn't do anything interesting with them.
I think Lucy Liu has the potential to be interesting. I think her character has the potential to be very interesting. She hasn't quite reached it yet, but I think maybe. So, anyway.
Well, and I'll watch it as well. I'm not committed to it, but I'll watch it. And I'm going to hope that they kind of grow on me. But in my mind, it's still... it's not Sherlock Holmes. It's just another clever police detective procedural thing.
All right.
You know?
So let's move on.
Yep.
Next up, let's talk about Grimm, and it's been gone for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's back with a pretty standalone episode, pretty standard. The best thing about the entire episode is that Monroe gets to go undercover.
And he's very enthusiastic about it too,
which
is great.
He's like, I get to be on an undercover mission?
Yep. Well, I definitely think that was fun just because he got to be with another Bloop Bot too, you know, which, you know, we've seen in the past we've seen others in the past, but I think in this case it's, you know, really kind of getting an idea of, you know, we needed somebody in this particular situation to go undercover into the church and, you know, find out really what this, you know, this preacher guy was all up to.
My only problem is the story was pretty simple and pretty straightforward and not really that interesting. Like, I was like, yes, this. The best thing about the episode, though, was Nick having to fight that guy that came...
The fugitive,
No, who's he? He wasn't a fugitive.
Well, they haven't given him a name or anything, and they're just kind of saying he's a fugitive, and, you know, he came over, and he's... And even Renard is like, he's this guy who,
it's not a fugitive. He has a name, but it begins with an F. But it's not fugitive. It's one of those German names that they're naming for everything. But he's like a special kind of hitman or whatever.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that he fights the guy... And he pulls, like, the end of the trail, he pulls out this hammer and he beats him or whatever and he kills the guy, right? And then they find the body later, like, what's the cause of death? It looks like he was hit with a hammer.
way to go, Nick.
I was cracking up.
I was interested. That was interesting, too, because I was really wondering, like, how did this guy get the drawing, you know, or the etching of the key?
Yeah.
You know, where'd that come from, for one thing? That was kind of strange. And then the fact that he made it out to the trailer, too. So he's really good at following people, because apparently no one else, like Hank or anybody, nobody bothered to follow Nick before to the trailer. I always wondered why it's just sitting there in that lot with all the others and no one's come to find it yet.
But I like that he hides it in plain sight. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, but it was like, but everything that's in there. And funny enough, when they were fighting in the trailer before he got him with the hammer, my first thought was, no, do you know how many priceless and important things are breaking in that trailer when you fight? Don't, you know, that's terrible. They're irreplaceable and Nick will need them.
Yeah.
And that was kind of cool too when they were in the trailer, or when Nick was in the trailer at that one point, when I think it was earlier on, but he had that little drawing that he had made.
Oh, and he added it to the book.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of neat where they didn't, nobody ever came out and said anything, but I was happy to see that he's like adding to the legacy kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool.
That was cool. And the other last thing I want to mention before we move on is I like that they finally, looks like maybe they're going to do what we suggested way back in the pilot, our premiere, which is the police chief had this like image of him kissing.
Like the flashback thing.
But it was like, it wasn't like he was just thinking about it. It was like, it overcame him. He was reliving it, and it overcame him.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes!
It'll definitely... They knew they had to do that at some point, because he was mojoed then. He had that crazy potion. But tying to that, Juliet didn't bother me as much in this episode either. This whole, I don't remember anything. So I liked the fact that she was just like, I'm sorry, I was supposed to call you to tell you that I was going out with my friends. Like, she just really didn't know what she was supposed to do with the relationship. But I like at the end where she was basically starting to kind of warm up to him, and it was not as awkward to have these two people living in the same house still when she does not know who he is. So I'm glad they addressed that, at least.
That was good. Yeah, that was good.
And then the other thing that I liked was when they were in the interrogation room with the assistant, the girl who we find out, of course, at the end is the one who did it. But they were in that room for the first time, and she changes. You know, she morphs into the lamb, and, you know, she kind of is, like, cowering in the corner because she realizes Nick's a Grimm. And Hank comes over, and he's, like, trying to, like, reassure her, and he's like, hey, look, it's okay. You know, we're here to help, and, you know, he's not your normal. And then he looks at Nick, and Nick kind of just kind of gives him a little nod, and Hank's like, Grimm. You know, like, it was like he had that first assurance that he can actually address Nick and call him that way, you know, or like refer to him that way, and that's how it's supposed to be now. So good. So I like that. That was like this little awkward thing that happened.
All right. Well, thumbs up for this. We need to move on.
Yeah.
Next up, we're going to talk about Fringe, and we are moved up to the final season, first episode, and I think they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, they did.
I feel like after I finished watching it, I woke up this morning and I was like, I need to watch Fringe again. Like, I was literally just thinking that. So, I am really impressed how they started off this new season. Speak.
Very slick, and they did not waste any time. Like, they have, because they know they don't have any time to waste. It's a short season and it's the final one, so they just went right into it.
I really like the actress who plays their daughter.
Yeah. She's totally
believable as their daughter.
Yeah,
she is. She looks enough like the two of them merged, and you know, it's been a while that we've, you know, it's so rare that you find somebody in that age range that you really just connect with so quickly, but she does it.
Yeah. And I like that their relationship is very much, they fell into, oh, we have a grown daughter, okay. And they just kinda they both just kind of accepted it, fell into it, and they're just, like, going for it. And it almost made me cry so many times during the episode.
It did make me cry. It totally made me cry. Oh. And I noticed that, too, because I watched it this morning, and that's exactly what happened. When Olivia first sees her daughter as an adult, you know, and she comes over, and Anna gives her a hug, and was crying, I was crying. I'm like, I'm crying for this girl because she finally fed her mom, and her mom is Olivia, and it's been so many years since they were apart. Oh my god. I couldn't help it.
Even when Walter's talking about taking her to a pier and that she'll always be a little girl to him, and then she kisses him, and I was like, oh.
Family thing. I love the fact that they're not playing around with it, and they're just like, you know what, this is the family.
Yes.
And they're in it for each other. You know?
Yeah, I was just like, I'm misting up a little bit right now just talking about it, all right? So, only other thing that is a really big deal for me, too, is apparently Tom talked about flashbacks, but apparently we're going to get flashbacks of 2015 when the invasion actually happened, and something happened between Olivia and Peter that broke up their relationship, and the daughter went missing, and I don't know what's happening, and then they like, it caused all this tension. So before they all got frozen in amber, like right before they all got frozen in amber, apparently it was this huge fight that happened between everybody. And so like Walter's mad at Peter, and like so there's all this other stuff underlying everything else. Because like right now, immediately, everyone's happy that everyone's back together. Mm-hmm. But then that's going to wear off, and all the kind of whatever the fights were about before.
I'm still mad at you.
Yeah, I think some of that's going to come back out. And they have to resolve it, and I like that. I like that it's just like all just happiness, you know. But they do have to work together to save the world. So
I think you know, the torture. How sad. That was a very painful thing to watch.
I have to say, I cannot handle Walter being tortured.
I know.
I was like, I couldn't handle it. I was like, you have to stop.
It was very hard.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was like, you have to stop it. You cannot hurt Walter.
And his desolation afterwards, and realizing that like he couldn't help, he had nothing, and I was just like my heart fell. I'm like, I'm sorry, because he really wanted. I mean, he was doing everything he could, and he was the key at that point, you know, to saving everything. And he realized that it wasn't going to work. And so when he was sitting in the car, and then he saw that little dandelion that was, you know, growing out of the ground, and he started crying. I'm like,
that was a nice moment.
It was.
I noticed they had a lot of symbols from the show. Like, he's sitting in the car, and then there's a seahorse is hanging from the
mirror.
The mirror. And then he sees the dandelion. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they did a bunch of symbols from the show.
And they changed they added to the opening credits too. There was freedom against the barbed wire.
Oh, they changed it completely.
Yeah. That's cool.
Those are the credits that they used from the last time they went to the future.
They have that one too? I don't remember that.
Yeah, okay. They did. So I've seen those credits. We've all seen those credits before, but it was still, I like the fact that they've changed the credit. I like the fact that every time you watch Fringe each season, the credits are different for different reasons.
Did you know there's actually a code hidden?
I was just going to say, I didn't check this week's code. I usually check it afterwards because I'm too lazy to look it up as the commercial breaks come. But I was going to look up the code this week.
What's the code? What do you mean?
You know, for all the commercial breaks, the ins and outs, you get the image with the little dot.
Yeah.
Well, each of those is like it's a code. It references a letter of the alphabet.
Oh.
So through the entire episode, it spells out a word it spells out a word that is somehow related to that episode.
Wow. You know, I've been watching this show forever, and I've never known that. Yeah.
No, totally. And I'm glad you reminded me, Thomas, because that was one thing I was going to do this morning is to look up the code for this episode last night. But yeah, Libby, if you go to the Wiki or something and look up Fringe code or Codex or whatever, then you can look at it for like all the seasons, what the different ones were for each episode. So.
All right. Well, we got to wrap this up, unfortunately, because I actually have to be places.
Yes.
This week was great television. We had a lot of television, and I almost thought I wouldn't be able to finish it all.
I watched a lot for someone who had to travel and got home yesterday at like noon.
Yeah.
There was a lot of catching up.
I felt like I was doing homework at some points, except for when I was watching Fringe, which was fantastic, and Person of Interest. But anyway. So if you guys have any feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We are on Facebook. You can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, Weedonopolis, and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.